call the Legacy and Advisory Board Committee and Budget Stabilization, too, I guess, to order. Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Kempinick?
Here.
Representative Kreit?
Here.
Senators Dotson-Rod? Senator Klein?
Here.
Ms. Sharp?
Here.
Mr. Hardmire?
Here.
Mr. Fong?
Here.
Okay. On the agenda, I think today, basically, committee, I think what we were going to try to do was go through the investment pooling, and then we have some folks from Raymond James who are going to give us a little presentation on some bonding and stuff on it, too. So with that, I think we might as well dive into the investment pooling and stuff, Darren, and have you walk us through that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Darren Schultz, and I currently serve as interim CIO with the North Dakota Retirement and Investment Office and State Investment Board. And before you, I have a slide deck which provides some background regarding investment pooling. And today, I'd like to discuss conceptually what investment pooling is, and ultimately I'd like to recommend that the advisory board consider revising its policy to allow the pooling of legacy fund assets with the other insurance pool participants. So I'd like to start on slide two and just highlight the existing policy which we currently have in place for the legacy fund. Here is an excerpt from the existing policy which was adopted in December of 2011. And it highlights that the State Investment Board is responsible for establishing investment guidelines for the vehicles in which the legacy fund assets are invested. However, it's understood that it's the preference of the advisory board, as it currently stands, that legacy fund assets not be pooled with any other fund assets managed by the State Investment Board. I'd like to talk conceptually about what investment pooling is. In a pooled fund, money belonging to two or more parties are pooled together with the authority of clients for the purpose of facilitating investment. And you can think of each entity that participates in a pool as a pro rata share of ownership within that pool. And you can think of pooled funds as being similar to mutual funds. The distinction is that, you know, a mutual fund is a product to be sold, whereas in our case, the pooling is a vehicle which allows clients that participate in that pool to benefit from not only diversification benefits, but also from economies of scale, the buying power that you get from having clients pool their assets together. And so I'd like to go into a little bit greater detail as far as what those benefits are, and please feel free to ask questions along the way. As far as the efficiencies that can be earned from having pooled funds, the first and foremost one is as it relates to the investment fees that are paid. And the industry term used to describe fees paid is what is called basis points, and a basis point is equal to 0.01% or 1/100th of a percent.
Darren, why don't you wait here a second? And I came prepared for that. I forgot it until you brought that up. Here, I'll pass out. And what it is basis points.
Okay.
I figured we were going to get in, and I'm sure Eric probably knows what we're talking about, and but I figured that we better here, you got two of them there. Do you want to see what I gave you?
Sure.
Give you some talking point. You already got her explained there, but I figured we were going to get into that, and I figured, well, there might be some members that might. So, but that's a good point. We're on the same page here.
Yeah, the Wikipedia description is very helpful. Basis point, it's really a convenient term. It's a unit of measurement in context where You're looking at percentage differences of less than 1%, which is often the case with traditional managers like stock and bond managers, where fees are typically less than 1% for institutional managers. So it's an easy way to kind of compare without having to verbalize percent each time you're describing the fees. But we look at manager fees in terms of basis points. And as an example here, when you're looking at fees on a portfolio of $200 on a total market value of a fund of $100,000, you divide 200 by 100,000 and you get 0.20%, which is equivalent to 20 basis points. Now, I think an important thing I'd like to highlight on the following slide is what we call fee schedules, which managers provide commonly. Investment manager fees, they're commonly stated in a fee schedule, which is a table that quotes fees based on assets managed for investment services provided. When you're looking at institutional portfolios, managers provide what is more or less a sliding scale based on the assets under management. And this is a recognition that the economy is a scale that managers have in providing investment management services to clients. This is they incentivize clients for more money that is placed within their assets under management. In other words, the greater the assets being managed, the lower the weighted average fee.
Darren, let's stop here for a second. And when you get to that weighted, you know, what basis do they start from? You know, is it their physical cost, their amount of their time, or how do they come up with you know, I mean, because on these scales, I'm sure that they prorate that across time, because I'm guessing that the time factor is their, I mean, their expertise. How do they rate that down, or how do they, where's the base start from this scale to even start at?
Each manager has their own respective fee schedule, which we commonly negotiate to get, you know, more attractive fees. In the case with other state investment board clients, we oftentimes are awarded a relationship discount. So this is usually a manager has a stated fee schedule, which is something that we work aggressively to negotiate. And the management fee is the cost of providing those investment services on an annual basis, which are, for traditional managers, invoiced quarterly. So we pay quarterly fees based on a agreed upon fee schedule. And
does name have something to do, you know, a brand versus a generic, you know, I mean, does that have anything, you know, with it too? You know, do they have, they must sell some of their history of how they've managed in the past too into this, don't they? Or how, you know, I mean, because you've had to command a certain dollar amount of this, they must have some past performances that indicate that they can get you this. You know, because you'd want to, what I'm getting at is, how do you want to get to that you want to use them? Just fees alone isn't going to do it, because they have to have some performances that you're even willing to talk to. Does that, when they're building that and stuff, does that come into play, or how do you balance, you know, the competition part of it, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
Well, fees are, you know, one aspect of our due diligence process. We look across a full array of criteria from, you know, the organization, the personnel, the investment philosophy, the type of product that they're managing, and certainly performance is a proof statement of, you know, these organizational criteria which we use to evaluate firms. And you know, the fees will vary depending on the type of product. You know, for example, an active equity manager, you know, you can kind of think of the fee as reflecting the cost of providing those services. And an active manager will certainly have a higher overhead in order to provide, you know, active management versus a passive management mandate. And so, you know, we certainly, when we look at fees, we in our office, we perform with the assistance of Callen Associates annual fee studies, where we look at the cost of the mandates that we have versus peers, looking what the range is, just to determine whether they're appropriate or not, and that certainly can be a basis for negotiation. So it's something that's there's a quantitative element and a qualitative one based on the investment services that are provided by the manager.
See, and Darren, I know you gave us this in the past, and I can't, but how many managers are we got? I know you've given us that in the past, but how many managers are we dealing with? Or do you got that? Is that a further testimony? Why don't you just wait then if
sure.
you got it in a number? Because I'm just rolling through. I know a lot of this is repetitive conversation, but I just was at the time. But why, if you got that, why don't you finish? Why don't you roll through what
yeah.
you're
Mr. Chairman, and later in the presentation, I'll highlight the managers that have within the insurance pool that
okay.
may be up
okay.
for consideration to recognize the benefits of pooling, and I'll get to that shortly.
Okay. Okay.
So on this tiered fee schedule example, we have a you know, this is kind of a hypothetical portfolio showing a sliding scale where we identified these breakpoints from 60 basis points on down to 30 basis points based on the amount of assets management. And this, you know, I guess you can think of it as unlike a retail mutual fund in which you and I might invest, which typically provide just a flat management fee.
Mm-hmm.
When we place mandates with our institutional managers, we recognize these advantages from scale, and we have here an example of varying portfolio amounts, and you can see, for example, a $25 million portfolio based on the fee schedule would have an effective rate of 60 basis points. And as you increase the amount of assets, you can see a pretty meaningful reduction in management fees, as I would highlight with the $150 million portfolio showing an effective rate of 42 basis points. So those are meaningful savings which you recognize when you pool mandates.
On that, Darren, is there a point to how low they'll go, and then it's pretty much, or is that all a negotiated, or, you know, when you do set this up, it starts at one and then ratchets it down, and it's, you know, because say you do start at 25 million, and then say you keep putting into that fund and you hit 150, you know, it's in the same, or that with that manager, and but say you put 250 in, or say 300 or something like that, or does that keep going, or is there a point where they don't go there anymore on it, or
Mr. Chairman, typically you have a baseline beyond which, of course, you know, it's subject to negotiation, but
mm-hmm.
Typically they kind of have a threshold minimum.
Gotcha.
And
sure.
One example I give as far as this fee schedule, one thing that the State Investment Board is working towards is in an effort to try to really get our fees down, we've started to look at performance fees
mm-hmm.
in situations where it makes sense. And we had a manager LSV on our pension side, which we had a fee schedule which we actually moved over to a index fee with a performance fee. And so in periods when they're underperforming, we are simply paying an index fee, which is very low. And when they're doing well, we'll pay them accordingly up to a cap.
Mm-hmm.
So this is you know, one area where we've been working aggressively. And so it certainly is something that we could consider as well for the legacy fund down the road.
Sure. Okay, continue. Any questions I should ask? Okay, keep continuing.
So on the following slide, I have a couple of examples using the same fee schedule that was on the prior page, where we show an example of a legacy fund $40 million investment with a manager using that same fee schedule without pooling, just a standalone account. you'd see that the effective fee rate on that $40 million investment would equate to a weighted average fee of 56 basis points. Now, however, if we were to utilize pooling, in which we have a pool portfolio value of $150 million with that legacy fund investment included, you can see a significant reduction in fees down to 42 basis points and a savings of $58,200 per year just for that one manager. So we're talking about, you know, some meaningful cost savings on fees that would result if pooling were allowed. On the following slide, beyond simply investment management fee cost savings, there is also additional benefit to be recognized in the form of trading costs. When you have clients that have standalone separate accounts that don't have pooled mandates, each of those managers within those accounts is executing trades, and the result of which is you're simply paying higher brokerage commissions for having multiple trades, as well as higher fees to settle those trades that occur. In addition to just simply the explicit cost of trading in form of paying commissions for each of those trades, there's also the implicit cost as far as what we call market impact. You know, when you go out and do a trade, you're basically selling at the bid and purchasing at the ask, and that spread that cost is borne when you're doing multiple trades, and so there's meaningful trading cost savings as well that would accrue as well. The third additional benefit is getting down to administrative efficiencies on the following slide. We have bullet points listing a number of efficiencies that would be recognized. One of which is when we have a common manager relationship, there is certainly a cost as far as monitoring each of these individual accounts versus if you're looking at one account across multiple client portfolios. That's staff time, which is saved to do that due diligence, as well as the compliance reviews that we have all of our managers embrace. So to the manager, they're looking at one account, whereas if it's, it would be separate accounts if pooling were not permitted.
Darren, on your, on the staff costs, I should remember this when we had your budget, but how much money do you usually, is it by money that you allot staff time to, or is it per account, or how do you allot staff time to, how do you use that? Is it like, and I'm just going to use an example, is like one staff per $1 billion of investment to follow, or how do you kind of go about doing that, as far as staff time goes on it?
As far as our investment, our budget, that expense is...
Mr. Chairman, my name is Connie Flanagan. I'm the Fiscal Investment Officer at RIO. As far as how the overhead costs are allocated amongst the funds, because everybody is pooled now, we are able to easily just go up based on pro rata share of market value. So whatever percentage of our total assets each fund is, we allocate the overhead costs, including salaries, rent, those types of things. Yep. They're allocated pro rata based on market value. We don't have really an instance right now where we don't have somebody pooled. In trying to think that through, I'm thinking that we would need to segregate the time for that one separately, because it wouldn't really be fair for those that are pooled to be paying the same amount as somebody who's not. So we don't have that situation, so we don't do it now. Yeah. But I think we would need to look at that.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to weigh the pros and cons of what, and it, it, it obviously, to you'd have to have somebody, like you said, separate, or you'd have to have somebody that would be carved out of your, to follow if it wasn't pooled in, you know, because this here, you look at it as an aggregate, and then you just keep the accounting code, basically,
correct.
Is what you do. So,
that's correct.
Okay, that answers my question for that. Anybody got any questions? Okay, go ahead.
Moving down the list of administrative efficiencies, rebalancing is another area where we would recognize some benefits. We have the ability, when clients are pooled, to sell and purchase securities between clients without having to actually go to the manager and have them execute a trade. It's a costless transaction. It's what we call paper rebalancing. It's simply a matter of internal accounting entries in order to achieve rebalancing, so that we wouldn't bear those transaction costs in situations where we could do paper rebalancing. And additionally, accounting is conducted at the pool level. So there would be, in reference to the transaction costs, fewer transactions to reconcile and record in the general ledger. Another benefit would be our custodian bank fees. We pay account fees of $500 to $750 per account. When pooling occurs, all those fees are split into a pro rata fee. And if not pooled, then that one fund pays all of that custodian bank fees per account.
So that, okay, Darren, and that's I was just going to get to, because when you get to these, you got a big number, but when the accounts, those get to be, you get quite a few accounts, I'm assuming.
Yes.
When you get
yes,
into
Mr.
That.
Chairman.
Yeah.
We pay performance measurement fees to Callan, our consultant. That's based on the number of portfolios. If we have common accounts, then those fees go down as well. Fee invoices, those are reconciled on a per account basis, and again, fewer accounts mean lower cost, as well as the cost to perform annual financial audits. That's based on, you know, the number of portfolios that would need to be reviewed. And legal fees is another area where if we have, if pooling does not occur, we have more contracts that would be required to be reviewed. And so in sum, you know, if assets are pooled, then each fund would pay their pro rata shares of those expenses incurred.
Okay. Any questions? Okay.
Moving forward, I'd like to delve into the specifics regarding the investment pool in which we are recommending the legacy fund to be allowed to participate in. This is a summary of all of the non-legacy fund clients that are within the insurance pool. And you can see in total we have approximately $2.1 billion within the insurance pool. And you can think of that as really buying power that could be brought to bear to recognize the economies of scale that by adding in the existing assets under management of the legacy fund, which total approximately $1 billion, the legacy fund would be enjoying the benefits of pooling with this additional buying power that could potentially be included as well. Mr. Chairman, on the following slide, we have, well, actually, it's the next one. My apologies. This is a listing of the insurance pool participants and the various asset class pools in which these various clients currently participate in. As was approved for recommendation to the State Investment Board by the Advisory Board, we have the large cap, small cap, international equity, fixed income, real estate, and real assets pools, which the legacy fund could potentially participate in. I would highlight that the Retirement Investment Office has been managing this pooled investments for the pension assets going back to 1989, as well as for the insurance pool of 1993. So we've been doing this a long time and doing it very successfully. And you could see that we certainly had the pools in place in which we could potentially implement the new policy allocation, which was adopted by the advisory board. On the following slide is a listing of all the individual managers within the insurance pool, listing by various managers within the major asset pool categories. And we also have a listing of what the estimated pool fees would be for each of these various categories across all of the asset classes that would be available to be utilized in, with pooling. We calculated based on the new policy allocation, which was recommended by the advisory board. We arrive at, assuming we're making an assumption that each of the managers that are in place within the insurance pool would be utilized. That is hypothetical. The actual implementation is still being worked through by myself, mm-hmm. Yep. in conjunction with RV Coons and Callan Associates. But to give you an example of the cost, if the legacy fund were to participate in each of the pools, we calculate a weighted average management fee of 24 basis points, with an additional 3 to 4 basis points for such things as administration, custody, and other costs. So in sum, a weighted average management fee of 0.27% approximately. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, in conclusion, on the last slide, Connie handed out a revised investment policy statement to the board, in which we have reflected the new policy allocation of
Just a second. Is it this copy here?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Yes. Everybody got one? We get enough conference committees through here that somebody didn't. Somebody's got a piece of paper they didn't need. Go ahead, Representative Craig.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Schultz. I'm looking at the insurance pool participants in the fund there. Right now you're stating a little over $2 billion. And wouldn't at some point the legacy fund would become the largest holder of this fund, because we're at $1 billion now. I foresee us, going way beyond this in the next few years. So we would be the largest participant in this fund. I mean, we should actually, we'd be the controlling, we'd be shimming up or firming up all these other participants in that fund because of the amount of dollars we're going to pour into that. So I do have some concerns that as large as I anticipate this fund to get, that we should be able to go out there as the legacy fund and be able to participate on our own and get rates that would be very, very comparable to or less than what we're seeing here at some point. Could you comment on that? I think that's what I see in the future.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kreit, certainly in time the legacy fund will exceed the size of the other non-legacy insurance pool participants. That being said, simply the extra assets that would be combined with the legacy fund would translate to a lower effective management fee when you combine the two assets. The sum of the total is greater than the larger one. So it, even though the legacy fund may be $5 billion, based on with a couple of years, you still would have an extra $2 billion that would be blended in which just on the management fee alone. But as I mentioned, there's many, many other benefits beyond just the management fee, which would be recognized just through that the sheer efficiencies that would be recognized.
Yeah, go ahead.
If I could continue, Mr. Chairman. I know what you're saying, but we get to $5-6 billion in the legacy fund, we can go out there and we can do better in what you're doing with this $2 billion, as far as I can see, because we've got the, you know, the dollar amounts that, you know, if we're 3 or 4 times bigger in this insurance pool fund, we should be able to negotiate. And I mean, we're going to be benefiting the insurance pool is what we're going to be doing. The insurance pool isn't going to be benefiting the legacy fund. I mean, we're going to, you know, we're going to be the largest investor in this, and we should be able to, on our own, or if they want to pool with us, is probably where it would get to, because we'd be the main provider of funds in this pool. You know, we should have the most advantage, I would say. Well, maybe I'm wrong, but that's the way I would look at it.
Well, and committee, you know, and that is, and that's been probably why we're at this discussion right now, was kind of the conversation. I think a lot of it, though, does have where, you know, we look at the state as a whole, and, you know, and looking at these funds, they're state funds as a whole, too, you know, and I even, you add the budget stabilization fund in there, which this committee is also in charge of, you know, and truthfully, we're going to have a conversation about that. That's kind of not been, you know, we've kind of been just going with what OMB set up here, three sessions ago, I guess, now, of what, but I think what we're trying to do right now is get, you know, is get some basis established, and, you know, we're going to have to, I think up until 2017, I think, I don't know if we want it, you know, and then at that time, there's probably going to be some change in what happens, but I think at that, you know, at that point, then we'll probably have to have another conversation on this. But I think the whole point is with the legacy fund right now is to have it so it isn't complicated, shall we say, you know, on it. And it's a KISS principle, I guess, is what I'm looking at right now. Go ahead, Commissioner Fong.
Darren, just a, I guess, couple of easy questions, I hope. Right now, with the legacy fund at about $1 billion, if we were to pool with the various funds that you have here, we would be benefiting, the legacy fund would be benefiting from the reduction in the management costs, along with the other kinds of benefits that you pointed out, correct? Mm-hmm. Yes or no?
Mr. Fong, that's correct.
Okay. So then the legacy fund grows to what Representative Kreit is suggesting, and we kind of end up dwarfing what's in these other pools. And then those funds end up benefiting from the growth of the legacy fund, because there will be, again, lower management fees, etc. True?
Mr. Fong, that's correct.
So Representative Kreit, what's wrong with that?
Well, I'm just bringing that point forward, that at some point the legacy fund is going to be the largest holder. You know, we'd be the, I would see it as, you know, the money talks. We've got the money. If we got $6-7 billion, you know, I would say we would be controlling the insurance pool participants, because they'd be have the advantage from the amount of money that we've got. We'd be bringing in the lower, you know, amounts that are charged to operate or run the fund, is what I'm saying.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kreit, I would rebut that all clients are benefiting. Certainly,
well, yeah, but
it's a win-win for everybody within the pool.
But at some point, though, with the large amount of money that I anticipate being in that fund, we're going to be the ones that are going to be able to benefit the insurance fund. At this point where you're at now, sure, we might get for a short period of time some benefit from their $2 billion they've got in there now. And I don't know how fast this fund grows. I don't anticipate it's growing very fast. I don't know how their investments are paying off. I notice what, you know, they're invested in. You know, small caps, as far as I'm concerned right now, are a pretty risky investment. But the legacy fund, again, I mean, is going to be the one that's going to be allowing these people to benefit because of the large amount of money that we have, that we'll be participating with, and being able to bring lower, benefits for the pool fees and all of that that are going to be involved in there. That's what I'm saying. So, you know, maybe at this point it's an advantage for us to be a part of the pool, but at some point it's going to be everybody else's advantage to be a part of the legacy fund, because we're going to be the people with the money, that fund. So that's just the point I'm making. And this is going to happen quicker than we think.
Well, committee and Representative, yeah, it is growing faster than what we've anticipated at, and hopefully it does stay that way. Because that's, R.V. Kuhn had a four-year fill-the-pot type thing, and then mature, and truthfully, I think we're going to be, the fill-the-pot's going to continue more than the 4 years, but you got to go with something that's relative, you know, normal, I guess, on that. And I think the thing is, too, is if it keeps filling up, that's just, you know, more of what the idea behind this is. I think one of the things, though, is what Representative Crate does bring up, though, is on, like on these here, what is the target rates on, when you look at their allocations, what is the target return rates on these pools too, are the funds that are in there, is that similar to what the way we kind of, on our allocations, is that kind of the same type of targets that these different funds have too, or is it, well, just curious?
Mr. Chairman, we have, each client has their own respective mm-hmm. asset allocation based on certainly their goals and objectives and constraints. But I really kind of look at it as more along the lines of the asset class pools.
Okay.
You're
definitely right when you look at some of them, because some of them are a little, when you look at what they're, when you go to this here, some are a little more aggressive and some aren't.
Or
and
WSI, for example, workers' comp plan, certainly it's a heavy fixed income allocation as the basis for an operating reserve for the assets. And I'm really kind of honing in on these asset class pools, which represent the policy allocations which each of the boards have arrived at, and so that's, I kind of look at it more along the lines of the asset class pools when looking at the pooling itself, rather than the clients
and committee and thank you, Darren, and committee, and truthfully it is, and it's been brought up in the past, and I think Mr. Hagmeier's brought it up on and I've read, we should get that document again some point, of the Norwegian model that you presented. Their concentration is very much on cost, following the costs of it, because mm-hmm. I think that's what basically is where we will get into trouble. I shouldn't say trouble, but where we don't manage our costs and stuff on it, and that's probably should be this committee's main focus too, is mm-hmm. not so much where we're at, is more of where the costs and stuff that are coming down to it. And that's I look at these funds that we're looking at here, they're all would benefit the state of North Dakota, whether they grew, whether the legacy fund pulled them along or these pulled the legacy fund along, it's all going to be at the benefit of the state of North Dakota. Mm-hmm. So I think the one of the things is that when you do look at that and you the breakdown of it, we are going to be a little different. Well, we'll have what we kind of allocated is kind of similar. We didn't I don't think we have any cash in our allocation on it, but it otherwise, they're similar to a lot of what other managers or what other boards are looking at too and stuff on it.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I also highlight the ease of implementation to start migrating towards the policy allocation. We have accounts in place. It would expedite the process of migrating over towards policy allocation, which certainly a work plan is being developed and will be that will be, you know, a recommendation will be formalized in time. But you know, it's, the infrastructure is in place, and so we have it available to begin to work towards that policy allocation over time. In the absence of that, it would you know, certainly require without pooling, requires to, you know, open accounts, you know, contract reviews. It would be a significantly more cumbersome process if pooling were not allowed.
Mr. Hardmeyer.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to ask, Darren. Is, you know, we spent a lot of time, and I think it make a pretty compelling case, and it makes sense to pool. But on the flip side of it, what are the benefits of not pooling?
Higher costs, Mr. Hardmeyer.
Benefits.
Oh, then what are the drawbacks to not?
You might as well state that as well.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hardmeyer, if I were to cite one drawback, and this is really, it falls upon staff responsibilities, determining that where there are efficiencies to be had by pooling, that we could utilize them in situations where we may decide that a common manager that's within the pool may decide not to employ, then we may have a combination of pooling and no pooling. But at the end of the day, this is the economies of scale from a management fee standpoint and administrative standpoint.
I tend to agree with you, Darren, that it makes sense to do that. But for the sake of discussion here that others have had in terms of, you know, maybe keeping it, segregating the funds, I mean, can you think of any, you know, reason to do that?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hardmeyer,
I
really can't point to a drawback that I would bring to the attention of the board. I really feel like it's a win-win.
Go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, Darren. Yeah, I'm suggesting, and certainly I still believe that the legacy fund is different from all those other funds we've talked about. Something the people in North Dakota have decided that we're going to do beyond the tank fund and all the other funds. It's something we're responsible for. All right. We're pooling these funds. My concern is, and you're going to help me with this, we're going to put $1 billion in here. Am I creating a larger risk of putting that $1 billion from the legacy fund and pooling it with all these other things? Am I creating a risk for the people's money that I'm feeling obligated to protect?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Klein, I don't see how you're imposing greater risk by combining clients into the pool. This is a standard industry practice. Other states do it. RB Kuhn's mentioned state of Wyoming. They've employed pooling. There are a list of many other states that do it. It's a vehicle, and it's not. We have our policy allocation, and you know, each of the managers, we have guidelines set up, and you know, the strategic allocation is the milestone decision, which, to the advisory board's credit, that is a major decision, and we're getting into really the implementation, and this is simply just a more efficient way of investing those assets.
And Mr. Chairman, and Darren, so not pooling, that's going to be a big pain for you guys. That's what you're, am I hearing that too?
Yes,
major issue. Because we're going to create a whole nother cash pool over here, or the legacy pool, and then the pool that you currently manage. So you're managing two pools. Is that what I'm going to hear?
Yeah, Senator Klein, yeah, we're overseeing
two sets of books, two whatevers.
We have, you know, separate accounts set up.
But aren't we going to have separate accounts anyway? Is my legacy money going to be, you know, my $1 billion? Am I going to be able to recognize my $1 billion And that,
yes.
Okay. Senator Klein, that's correct. I mean, the legacy fund has its pro rata ownership of that pool. That is its interest. That is accounted for. It's not like, it's simply, you know, from a manager's perspective, they're managing one account. And, but we're responsible for, you know, accounting for those assets. But that's legacy fund. Those are legacy fund dollars. It happens to reside within an insurance pool, which allows for us to recognize all of these benefits. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Schultz, you know, legacy dollars remain legacy dollars. They don't become commingled with workforce safety and insurance dollars, state fire and tornado dollars. They still retain their identities as separate accounts, even though they are going to be pooled as one invested fund.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Fong, that is correct. Those are legacy fund dollars.
So it's safe to say the corpus, the what we have in the legacy fund is not going to be in any way pilfered or put into some of these other funds that you're managing.
Those are, Commissioner Fong, those are legacy fund dollars. They happen to be ownership within each of those respective pools. Where it's appropriate, we combine those dollars across multiple clients, but account for them internally as those are recognized as legacy fund dollars.
Committee and Darren.
Commissioner Fong, Connie Flanagan, you know, highlighted the audits which occur that certainly validate that.
And committee, and you know, and we're touching on that, and you know, hopefully we don't have to see. But like, if there is losses, say you do have one, and how is a loss accounted for then? Too, say there is some losses or something in one of the funds or something. How is that accounted? Is that just prorated out then too?
That's correct,
to the
Mr.
amount
Chairman.
Of that's gone into that,
Mr. Chairman. That's correct.
That's where, you know, and that's where the risk, and that's in my mind, you know, when we set those allocations up, you know, that's because there is difference, I'm sure, even within these other funds, that there's going to be different levels, like I said, and that's why I kind of got on that, you know, what, because some of them are looking for higher returns and what the legacy fund is looking for. So you don't go into, I'm sure there's asset classes that will return this or that, because, you know, and maybe we should just walk through this paper that this legacy, this policy statement, you know, maybe we should just walk through that a little bit, just review what our kind of our standards are, kind of, you know, the policies and stuff of what they are, because, you know, the first one is basically lays out what we've talked about in the past has been, and you know, truthfully, we've had long discussions about this 15% coming out and leaving it. Truthfully, me personally, and me, I think that's for the next, for truthfully, it'd be the 24th, 25th, because this money isn't going to be available until the July or the 19th, or the 2019 session. It isn't. And truthfully, I think that's at that point, if they want to, I think the way we invested this, and I think that was the direction we given was that 15 is not an issue going, you know, investing this money. Because that gets to be very cumbersome trying to hold that back out where something that might or might not happen. I think that legislature is going to have to figure out how they're going to deal with it. I think our job is to invest this money, and if they want to access it and take the 15% of the corpus, then that's going to have to be their challenge of how to figure it out. So that's that statement from me anyways. The fund mission, it says there, you know, and that's what basically this is, a lot of this has been, you know, what we've talked about in the past, and it's more for new members of how we've how we've looked at this, and I did put in on this page too, we've had a lot of conversations about the responsibilities of the Legacy and Budget Stabilization Fund, and you know, and it is a statutorily controlled statement, so it comes from the legislature, but it is what our charge is kind of with this fund, and that's basically bullet three here on this here. It is, and then what was kind of what I wanted to get at though was getting down further on what SIB's responsibilities are, and then on the number four was the risk tolerance, and we kind of established that a couple weeks ago on when we set the asset allocations of what our risks are and what we wanted to see happen. And I think our job is going forward here with this is to manage, like I said earlier, I think when you read stuff that other funds, the Norwegian Fund, Wyoming, truthfully, I've read through some of their policy statements, and you know, and truthfully, I've been following that probably a little closer than most. But I've seen how they've put, you know, and they've got the same thing here, but they got just about $16 billion, probably more than that, that they're managing now in funds, you know, that they've pooled. And well, and it isn't really the right word of pooled. It's just managed. You know, it's a pooled management. Is kind of what I mean. We're different managed, but those money's got to flow into the same accounts, and it's kind of hard to separate out that dollar if you're going into the same management account, you know, on it, and so it gets very tough to not look at that aspect of what you're talking about on it. I've tried to figure out, you know, the pros and cons of not pooling on it. One of the pros is that you basically do, but then we might as well hire another two or three people in your office then to do that, because you're going to have that to have due diligence, because you're going to be doing the same thing repetitive with whatever you do on any other these other accounts. So, you know, I mean, and I don't know if we're gaining any more transparency, shall we call it, or anything anyways, if we would do that. So I don't see the
House wouldn't put those FTEs annually.
No, we wouldn't. Well, it you know, just besides, and truthfully, it would be tough to start justifying, you know, start adding. I think we want to be safe. I think we want, you know, this fund is defensive in nature, because where it's coming from is something that's we're trying to make up from every barrel that comes out of the ground is another barrel you're not going to see, and this is just a small portion of what we're seeing during this legislative session of what mineral wealth does create. It creates a lot of opportunities, but it also creates a lot of challenges, because as this depletes, we're going to be where this fund here, and like I said, it's not, I've had a lot of comments of people out in our country, is this money is not for today, it's for the future, and so that's what we have to keep, and that's my biggest concern, is that this is here 20, 30 years down the road, that what we're doing today is going to be our lifestyle that we have today, what we're enjoying in the state today, that they can enjoy 20, 30 years from now. And that's the challenge that I see that we got with this money. But as you read through that, like I said, it's kind of what we've talked about. Go ahead, Representative Crate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Schultz, say that we decide to pool, and 3-4 years from now, we've got $6-7 billion in the legacy fund. And we decide, we have a fund manager come to us and says, you know, I can really give you a good deal, and he doesn't, you know, work with you guys. Can we withdraw from the pool if we're once in the pool and go in a different direction?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crite, I mean, certainly the advisory board, if they wanted to change their stance regarding pooling, decision that could be arrived at, and that bridge could be crossed at that time. It's certainly, you know, within the scope of authority of the advisory board to, in the development of the investment policy, to, if they wish to make that decision, that's something that could be considered down the road.
Is there any other discussion? Well, Darren, I'll go ahead.
I guess I just have a question. Darren, going through this document, there are a few, they look to be relatively minor changes. You know, the most notable ones, obviously, are the new allocation that is the result of our last meeting up on the top of page 3. The deleted language concerning pooling, which you're anticipating, I guess, if we choose to take that vote today. But could you just kind of give us, and obviously our current asset mix down on the bottom of page 2, which was in the form of the table that you're completely taking out. Could you just speak to some of these other ones? Are they important, or are they just kind of some cleanup?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Fong, the other, the items beyond the policy allocation and pooling language adjustments that we made are just really kind of housekeeping cleanup items that we made. We did make a minor modification to language concerning social investing to make it a little bit more, provide a little bit more clarity regarding you know, what we can, how we define social investing. So that was a minor adjustment.
And where is that,
Commissioner Fong? Under restrictions, item 7, letter F.
Okay.
We inserted language which doesn't look like we showed the change, but it we added language which states socially responsible criteria. It didn't specifically state socially responsible. It was it simply stated that social investing is defined as the investment or commitment of public fund money for the purpose of obtaining an effect other than a maximized return to the fund. We simply added the socially responsible criteria to make it a little bit clearer. So that was the other adjustment that we made. And we, on the internal control section, item 8, there was language concerning broker relationships. In light of the fact that we are the State Investment Board oversees programs which are wholly externally managed, we don't have direct broker relationships, so we didn't feel like that was relevant language, and we simply inserted investment manager selection and monitoring to replace broker relationships. And then on item 9, just a grammatical change on there. Can't recall what exactly we deleted. Yeah.
Some of those, of course, annual instead of quarterly.
Yeah, we need, do you recall which?
Starting with the sentence additionally.
Starting with the sentence, the second paragraph with additionally, we changed that to quarterly, or changed it from quarterly to annually. These are reports that we actually provide on an annual basis to our other clients as well, and so we were just making that consistent with the reports that we are currently generating on an annual basis. And the one other thing on the first page that changed was we had an incorrect reference to a section in the century code. 211002 should have been 211011, and so the language changed there based on the language in that statute.
Thank you.
Committee, we're running a little long here, but if you indulge just a second here on this, how like on the money that's invested right now, how are you going to roll that out? Are you just going to leave it in bonds and then just start the new money showing up, start investing this into this new allocation process that we've put forward?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I've been working with Callen Associates and RV Coons to look at a variety of scenarios, which would include, you know, taking all of the new money and deploying it into the other asset classes with and without drawing from the existing short-term mandates that are in place. There's still some more background work to be done in developing an implementation timeline, and I'm not prepared at this time to make you know, specific.
When do you have kind of a preliminary date or anything that you'd figure? Because we'll probably have to look at that sometime. Would it be sometime like first part of July or sometime that time frame or somewhere in there?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm hoping to have a you know, formal plan within the next hopefully 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
Just to
we can just stay in contact,
sure.
Too and stuff because it's so there's okay. Because, yeah, 4 to 6 weeks is what's being deposited. That's another $100 million, well, $200-$300 million, I guess, or close, $270, if that's like the last one. It is.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the last deposit was approximately $80 million.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Okay. Is there any,
Mr. Chairman, well.
Oh, you got Mr. Chairman.
I was going to just move approval of the changes that are reflected in the updated policy statement that's been provided by Mr. Schultz.
I would second.
Move the second. Second by Mr. Hardmeyer. I suppose we better take a roll on this.
Question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the rebalancing of the fund on page 3 to annually, tell me the way that was done, costs, or no reason that we couldn't get a quarterly report or at least one every 6 months?
Mr. Chairman, actually, that language was not included at all originally in your original document. And again, it's standard language that we've included in others, so I did add it in here just to be clear that there was a rebalancing policy. The State Investment Board has a rebalancing policy and that it would be followed. I can assure you that language of not less than annually, we look at it monthly. And we provide any necessary changes as any asset classes are out of balance. So it is being done on a more regular basis than annually, but our standard language has been annually, and we would be happy to change that if you would like to.
Mr. Chairman. Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Crate, I think that, you know, we can put this in. Yeah, I think what you're looking at when you say quarterly report, I think you're looking more at the earnings part of it, though, than and I don't, truthfully, I don't think once we get, you know, we might have to see where everybody's comfortable at, but this thing, I don't think we want to be because this is going to be a slow process. Yeah, no, but I was looking at that, too, because I think that's kind of what the intent is, that there's an annual rebalancing and there be a report with that at that minimum on it. So, okay, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, could we, before we vote on the changes, I'd certainly like to vote on whether or not we're going to move forward with pooling, because otherwise, why would we remove that language? So I think we may be getting our head, you know, I think maybe we need to listen to all the folks who have come to speak, and then we can move on to the committee discussion. But I'd like to certainly hope that we could, you know, listen to everything here and then make that initial decision and before we want to remove that.
Mr. Chairman,
my motion, I guess, incorporated or contemplated the issue of pooling. So if I didn't make that clear, my motion was to adopt the changes as shown here in our policy statement by the State Investment Board, which includes the deletion of the pooling language. So that was my intention. With all due respect, Senator, as much as I look forward to hearing from the guests who are here, I'm not sure I understand why that has anything to do with the decision about us making a decision on pooling and finalizing our statement.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess just a comment. I would look at the agenda, and I would have looked at it and said, you know, there's people who have traveled. Mm-hmm. They've been on the agenda. They've been sitting here patiently waiting. It did suggest that the comments by interested persons would be last, and then it says discussion and directives, and that seemed to me would come at the end.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I was just trying to be,
as a committee chairman,
I've always looked to people who have come from far away and had discussion
and
moved on.
No, and that was, like I said, that it got caught up in the, and I guess, committee, this is something that we've had a good discussion about, but I don't disagree that we can hear some comments. I think one of the things, though, is that I don't think we can change anything today on what we are going to do moving forward, but I think we can for future meetings, and that's kind of the idea behind some of the why the guests are here today, was to inform us on something moving forward, because I think we're into this process that we need to understand, look at other avenues, there's no doubt about it, but I think we've 2 weeks ago we made this decision of how to approach this, and we can, you know, if the committee wants to indulge the chair, if second would remove the second, and we can have this vote later. If not, then we'll move forward with it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll withdraw the motion, but I think we need to make a decision today at the end
of the presentation.
So I certainly will withdraw the motion, but we need to make some decisions today, and we need to start moving forward.
Commissioner Fong, but the second needs to move first.
Confused by the next presentation, what that has to do with delaying the vote on the policy. Is there a contra discussion here based on what we did 2 weeks ago? Is that what we're hearing?
No.
How are they? I'm a little bit confused on why they're even.
Mr. Hardmar, no. It's for information only. Is what, and it's on some bonding, it's for information. I truthfully don't think it's going to be relevant to our vote right now on what we're doing with this, because I think this process has been over a year and a half in the process of it, and the new members of the committee, we've had some long discussions about how to move forward this, and truthfully this is in a lot of ways is an ongoing process. We've set some stuff, and there's nothing that we can't look at different, and I think we do. Is every meeting we've had has been a learning experience, shall we say, on it, and so I don't think there's anything that but I don't think what I've come to understand is that I think that the State Investment Board, and that's right, wrong, or otherwise, and that's something we're probably going to have to talk about, but that's more legislatively than it is that this board's capable of dealing with. We have responsibilities, there's no doubt about it. You look at because we've had this, this board does have is a little bit more powerful than a regular advisory board, but it's more because of who the people are on it than what a normal advisory board is. But I don't think we've got it with spelled out in statute that would give us authority to circumvent the Constitution language of what has been, and it's got to run through the State Investment Board. So I don't think this board's got the authority to run outside of the Constitution language on this, and it's got to stick to the State Investment Board's policies. We can sure put a, we can direct, and I think we do have a lot of authority of how we need to do stuff, but I don't think we can circumvent anything that we've started, of what the State Investment Board policies are.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if it helps to move this meeting along, I will withdraw my motion, but again, I will be coming back after, you know, the presentation we hear, to revisit the whole issue of advancing the changes. So maybe we should then move forward.
Well, I need the second to withdraw his motion. The way this works is second controls the motion.
I'm in your domain, so.
I'm not inclined to do that.
Okay. Well, we have a motion on the floor to accept the policy changes of the legacy fund investment, including the pooling of the legacy fund with the insurance funds.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to resist the motion at this point. If we would have followed the agenda, we would be at the 325 item. We then have comments by interested persons, and then we have 345 advisory board member discussion and staff directive. I think that would have been the point where this material, this policy would have then been handled and voted upon. I think we should follow our agenda and stick to the agenda.
Yep. Okay. Well, it's been moved and seconded. We have to take a vote on this. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Kempinick?
No.
Representative Kreit?
No.
Senator Dotsenrod? Senator Klein?
No.
Ms. Sharp?
Yes.
Mr. Hardmeyer?
Yes.
Mr. Fong?
No.
Okay. Well, that was... We got to have these debates. There's no doubt about it. I'm sorry about the confusion. Why don't we move on to... why don't we move on to the 325? I guess we're a little bit running late, but and we'll have a presentation. Would you state your name?
My name is Mark McKinnon. I'm Vice President of Institutional Fixed Income Division of Raymond James and Associates, and my presentation doesn't really have anything to do with pooling, so
yep, thanks.
I hope I didn't cause any problems or grief.
No,
here.
No.
So what I want to talk to you, first introduce myself. I have been an institutional fixed income advisor for 19 years. I work with large institutions, especially municipalities, corporations, hospitals, and investment managers. And after receiving my MBA, I knew it was a field that I could go in and help people and explain which investments would meet their parameters and find value. Before receiving my MBA, I was a graduate in political science, and so this has been a great day for me to see how this process works, and I know you've all had a long several weeks and a long day today, so I will try to keep my remarks brief. I appreciated Darren Schultz's focus on saving money, on costs. I thought pooling, what he said about pooling was an excellent example. The institutions I cover, they will have some money that they manage internally or in-house. That is typically short duration, high-grade corporate bonds, high-grade municipal bonds, or United States Treasury or United States agency bonds. And then they'll also have longer-term investments that are a little more esoteric in nature, such as equity funds and some of these funds that Darren mentioned earlier. And I liked what he brought up about cost, because a lot of these funds, you need these experienced, you know, a lot of research, a lot of support behind them. And some of these types of securities are very generic. They're almost like commodities, short duration, super safe, super liquid. And so one thing that I want to bring to your attention is it's a possibility, and actually a recommendation from me, to manage some of the money internally. So what you would do is have, right now I don't believe the resources are in place. We had an excellent meeting this morning with your state treasurer, Kelly Schmidt, and then also the chief investment officer, Darren Schultz. and we spoke with them about this idea, because once you get to critical mass as far as assets under management that are in this allocation of short-term fixed income bonds, then there is no external management fee. All you have is fixed costs. And so whether you're managing a portfolio of $100 million or $10 billion, you have relatively fixed costs. And so as this legacy fund gets larger and larger, and it sounds like it's growing and growing and will continue to do so, I believe that by managing a portion of those funds in-house will save significant amounts of money in terms of management fees. We've discussed possibly that could be the treasurer's office, it could be the state investment board, it could be the Bank of North Dakota, but it is a situation where you would receive significant costs by having internal managers that keep track of the funds that are allocated with certain parameters.
Say, Mark, when you bring that up, and to start to take on like bonds and stuff like that, what kind of expertise does would an institution need, or what would you need to invest in or to have to do that if you were going to start doing it internally?
Yeah.
And because you do have some fixed costs because of some employees that you'd obviously have to employ probably to do that. How would you go about doing that?
Yeah.
Then?
I have clients who have a degree in finance. Some have degrees in accounting. Others have MBAs. And it's a situation where there's a lot of education by a lot of different firms that help explain bond investing. So there are many firms throughout the country, ours included, but others, that will come in and educate these investors on how to go about transacting in bonds. And it really is very generic type securities. These are liquidity instruments backed by the U.S. government agencies, highly rated bonds, and very short duration. So the price fluctuations would be very minimal.
Because, and that's, I guess, one of the concerns is when you get into the institutional part investing, it gets to be very, there's a lot more eyes looking on more, shall we say, than there is probably an individual and stuff on it, and that's why I kind of asked
And there are entities that I cover that will have as little as $25, maybe $50 million to invest, and they manage it internally. They have specific guidelines from their investment board, say the bond needs to have shorter than this maturity or duration, has to have this rating, has to have one of these types of agency securities. And then when you have that, then the investment officer will go out, get competing bids and offers from different dealers, institutional dealers, and then make the best decision based on the recommendations there.
Okay. Go ahead, Senator Klein.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and Mark, thank you for coming, and someday we may be having this discussion. You sat through the discussion. You've heard about the pooling discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You, as a working all these years in your field, this is a good idea?
Pooling? Yes.
Okay. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, I would be totally supportive of pooling.
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mark. In dealing with the Treasurer today, would they have the capabilities out of their office to do this? You got Bloomberg or wherever you want to go, to...
Right. And I do not know firsthand. Speaking with the Treasurer, she said there would be more staff required. And the way I look at it is a lot of my job is filtering through the different bonds as far as credit and maturity and what makes sense for my clients. And so, yes, that person would be there to manage the money, but a lot of clients of mine will wear several hats. They'll manage the portfolio, they'll also be the accountant, and they'll also be the forecaster and things like that. So I would think they would probably need some additional resources. But as far as when they talk about management fees, we're talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, especially as this fund grows. And when you look at it as a portfolio manager, it's just as easy to manage a $100 million portfolio as it is to manage a $10 million portfolio. And so you don't, and that's why, as Darren explained earlier, some of these investment managers will lower their fees as you pool. That's one of the benefits. So one of the benefits of managing the money internally would be, no matter how much it is, you may have to add another person here or there, but it's going to be significantly less money than paying many basis points on another $500 million.
See, and that's committee, and thank you, Mark. You know, and I, that's one of the things that, like I said, it seems like every meeting has a learning curve in it, and I think that we've been talking, you know, been having this discussion for over a year now, and I think that what you bring up is a very is an angle that I guess we haven't talked about before, about doing things, you know, especially on the bond side of the coin, hiring or having some type. I know that the way the language reads in the you know, and that's what we have to follow is the kind of the guidelines of the Constitution of the way this got established. And I know there's policies in place with the investment board right now and stuff on it, and that's something in the future I think we're going to have to, we'll probably look at and see where we're at, or see the pros and cons of internal versus what we're doing today and stuff on it. Because it, you're right, costs from everything I've been able to read on these type of institutional investings is costs. I mean, it really comes down to that when you start looking at how they work, because they're long term. There's a lot of money involved in it, and I think that's going to be one of our charges, is watching the costs.
And most states have money internally managed and externally managed. In fact, it was interesting where South Dakota has all of their everything managed internally, and that's kind of clear over here. And then you have state of North Dakota. Clear over here where everything is externally managed. And every other state that I know of will have, you know, 5 years and in, agencies, treasuries, high grade corporates, 5 years and in, they manage themselves. That way they can, they'll have bond service, you know, bond service dates, they'll have payroll, they'll have cash flows that they can forecast, and they have complete control over those themselves.
When they're looking at shorter term.
Yeah, shorter term, high grade, super safe, super liquid investments. Okay. And the cost savings are huge, especially as you get into those larger and larger numbers, the economies of scale.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you. You brought some points up that I appreciate. Mr. Fawn, did you have a question? Pam. Mrs. Sharp.
Mr. Chairman, I think this has been a really interesting presentation, and it is a concept that we haven't talked about before. But I don't know if you've presented to the State Investment Board or not, but that probably would be your audience, because I think even down the road, if this looks like a route that the State Investment Board might go, I think it would be their decision. I don't think it's in the parameter of our responsibility. I think this goes beyond the investment policy and the asset allocation. So I think we'd be stepping out of bounds if we were to weigh in on this particular issue for the State Investment Board. Like you say, the Constitution requires that they invest the money. So I think that would be their call.
No, and thank you, Ms. Sharp, because it is something we haven't talked to, you know, truthfully, and you do bring up a new perspective. But it is, like I said, we are a little different on some advisories, and probably more so because we're legislators, and when we're in session, you make it where you do bring up stuff that brings, but it's not today that we can, you know, it isn't this committee's charge to change that direction on it.
And if I may, where the state's money, you know, not the legacy fund, goes back to Darren's excellent point of pooling, where it could be a situation where the state investment board said, for this many dollars, it doesn't make sense to hire two or three people and manage it internally. But if you pool the short-term fixed income, you know, high-grade bonds of the legacy fund and pooled those with the state's money and the investment board's money, then you may have that critical mass where it makes sense to manage that internally. And of course, that is the investment board's decision. But it's something that we wanted to bring up, that is something other states do, other entities do, and it could be a great way to save costs.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much.
I really appreciate your patience with
Thank
us.
You.
Thanks. There's one thing else. The consideration of the minutes of the April 2nd, 2013 meeting. Sir, moved. Second. Yeah, Representative Craig. Okay. Well, should we? What's that? Yeah, let
Mr. Chairman, assuming we. Oh,
yes, we need a vote on the minutes. Is there a motion to approve and seconded? Voice vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All in nay? Okay. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, assuming we are now at the 3:45 item on our agenda, which is the discussion and staff directives, I would like to return to the issue of our policy and make the motion I made earlier. And as I do that, I just want to make it clear to our guests today that my motion earlier was not in any way intended to, be a reflection of the information provided, but we do have a lot of work to do, and this has been going on for, as Keith said, Representative Kempinick, almost a year and a half. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the changes that have been suggested by the State Investment Office that we have before us.
Sir, move second by Mr. Hardmeyer. You don't have to move this one. Is there any discussion? Senator Klein?
So, Mr. Chairman, so I'm clear, this is the changes in the language plus the fact that we are going to now pool our resources with the State Investment Board. Just so I understand.
Yes.
So it's clear, and maybe even for the record.
Yep. So Mr. Chairman, I will clarify my motion. That includes the deletion of the language about pooling, which is found on page 3. So the motion is all of the changes plus the substantive issue of us now changing our policy to allow for pooling.
Okay. Any other Okay. Clerk will take the roll.
Well, Mr. Chairman, for discussion,
yes.
You know, I may have been a little reluctant, but certainly Mark's comments were helpful. Someone certainly from the outside who doesn't sit in this room or in this Capitol. So it was a good opportunity to hear that. So I do appreciate that, and it's probably helped my decision.
Well, Senator Klein, and it is, and I apologize too. Truthfully, we've done this in an hour and a half, and we've had these discussions that started at 9 o'clock in the morning, and we run through 2. So we're doing pretty good. Like I said, every meeting I think, and I apologize to the new members because some of us have been sitting here for the last year and a half. Are, I think, understanding what we're trying to do or what's being trying to be done. And it is, like I said earlier, it's very, in ways it's complicated, in other ways it's not. I think, Mark, I really do. I thought you brought up a new avenue or a new perspective that we have not talked about, and I think it's something that we're going to have, well, we will look into going forward, and I'm sure Bruce will make sure we do. It is, because I think that it's something that we need to keep all these
you know, looking at different as we move in on it. But with that, I think we should move on. I think we've had a motion and seconded. I think we need to take the roll.
Representative Kempenick?
Yes.
Representative Crate?
Yep.
Senator Dotson-Rod? Senator Klein?
Aye.
Ms. Sharp?
Yes.
Mr. Hardmeyer?
Yes.
Mr. Fong?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Well, if there's nothing else, we move to adjourn. Second, motion carries.